Today is October 31st, Monday at 10:15. We're the Fisher Body Historical Team. Today we'll be interviewing Mr. Tom Pizzo. Before we get started, we'll say the names of the other interviewers. My name is Marilyn Coulter.
John Fedora.
Doug Rademacher.
And today we're here with Tom Pizzo. Tom, can you please say and spell your name for us, please?
Thomas Pizzo, P-I-Z-Z-O.
And your address, please?
1705 South Genesee Drive.
And naturally, you're a male. Oh, Genesee's in Lansing, correct?
Yes.
And your marital status?
Well, widower.
You're a widower, okay. And do you have any children?
Three.
Three? Boys, girls?
Two boys and a girl.
All right.
I had another boy, but he drowned up north, so.
Okay. And your education level?
2 years of college, community college. No graduate.
Oh, was there anything in specific that you studied?
Industrial management.
Oh. Great. And military service?
12 years, U.S. Army.
Oh, 12 years? Oh. And what was your rank in your 12 years?
Sergeant.
Sergeant. Oh, okay. And now, Pizzo, does that mean you're of Italian descent?
Italian, Sicilian, primarily Sicilian.
Sicilian, oh, okay. Great. Well, Tom, can you tell us, what date did you hire in?
9/14/70.
So, can you tell us what department you hired in?
Material control.
Material control. Can you tell us what that first day was like?
Yeah. I'd had the UAW experience before, so when I hired in, I was already a union member, and they told me that I wouldn't be working very long that day. They were going on strike that night. That's when we went out for 30 and out, and so all I had to do was reinstate myself by paying my initiation down to the union hall, and then... So I did that. I was working up on the line, feeding as a line feeder, putting in headliners into the headliner rack, and we ran out. I didn't know what to do. Meanwhile, they shut the line down. And my uncle happened to be general foreman up there at the time, Joe Pizzo. And he came down and started giving me the riot act and cussed me up one side, down the other. And I says, "Are you done?" And I proceeded to lay into him with the same language he used on me. And by that time, my supervisor got up there and said, "What do you mean you stopped the line for him? We're not even running that color anymore." I was set up. After that, though, I never had any problems with any of the foremen. And for those that know me, through the past and the plant and everything, I showed up every day, but I wasn't always here to work. I was here to have a good time. And I made in the 30 years I was on the line, I made the most of having fun and making fun for everybody else around me. Go ahead, ask me something.
Now, what I wanted to ask you is that, first of all, you said you had the UAW experience before. So were you hired in here before? Were you at another plant?
I was here before, but I was... fired for fighting.
And how long?
And I had to go out on probation for a year and a half before they'd hire me back in. And when they hired me back in, it was the night we went on strike.
So the first time you were was in 68?
Yeah, I was, what was I doing then? I was working in the cushion room.
Oh.
The old cushion room when it was here.
How long had you worked in there?
Less than 90 days.
Less than 90 days. And so then you went out and then you got rehired in the 70s?
Yes.
Okay. And so now, what was it like to come in and the very day that you came in was the same day that they were going to go out and strike?
It was like coming in on a vacation. I had been working in a for a lawn and garden company. And I knew they were going on strike, so I didn't, as long as you're calling me into work, I'm coming in that day. But I hadn't quit my other job yet. So between pulling picket duty back in 70, and I had a pickup truck, so I was on the night shift, and we hauled the coffee urns and the donuts around to the various sites during the night. Okay. And then after picket duty, I went to do my day job. And I told them, I said, as soon as the strike is over, I says, that'd be my last day.
Now, you said for 30 and out. For those people who don't know what 30 is out is, could you please explain that?
30 and out is 30 years, you get 30 years seniority in the plant, and you're eligible to retire. Mm-hmm. And then they said you had to have, from there they went to the point system. You get so many years seniority, you take your years and you get points for those other years or something. I don't know how the point system worked, but you had to have 80 points to retire. And I got my 80 points about the same time I got my 30 years in. So.
Okay. So do you remember how long the strike was?
Pardon?
Do you remember how long the strike was?
I think it was 79 days.
79 days. Okay. So, you were out for your 79 days, and then you came back in and you hired in?
I got back in. I got on a line job. The only reason why I got on material my first night back was they didn't have any place else to put me. But when I came back off a strike, I got put into the working for Rocky Roggerman, installing third seat boxes in the old Vista Cruiser station wagons. And then I had to put in the trim on the skylights in the back. I did that job for about 2 years. And then I did other, then I worked my way down the line to, I ended up on utility. But that took me about 4 years to get there.
What is utility?
Utility is where you can do every job in the department. And also you can, if you're low on the seniority list on utility, you get shipped out to other departments that need help. And you're supposed to be able to learn that job within 3 working jobs of production so that you can do it by yourself.
Tommy, you said you didn't come here to work, you came here to have fun. You want to explain that to me?
Well, I had a, you know, I had a goal in life that I was predisposed with, that I wanted to make sure that I tried to make people laugh either with me or at me. Make one person smile per day. And I think in the 30 years I worked in here, I didn't have one day that was a failure.
Mm. So, you...
so in turn, everything was, you had to have a great sense of humor, and I feel that every day I build up on that humor either at my expense or at the expense of others who are at the end of my wrath. And a few times I was told that I was stepping over the line, and Marilyn can attest to that. When I did one day, I came up with a song that stepped over the line with her. And the people that were around me that heard that song at that day, knew at that point that I'd stepped over the line. And I didn't cross that line again. But,
what are some of the other kind of pranks that you might have seen or been a part of when you first hired in? Or while you worked here?
Pranks?
You didn't pull any pranks?
I don't really understand the question, I guess.
Did you pull any jokes? Were there any types of things that you did to pass the time? Outside of making up improper songs with people?
No, not really. I had a few toward the end there. I had this one song that I danced to. And I had one of the girls say that she was sexually offended by it. And that's where I first got my first reprimand for sexual harassment. Everybody else thought it was funny, but this was the same woman that brought pictures of her daughter from the time she was born until she was 18 years old on a bearskin rug, nude, and thought nothing about that. But my gyrating hips, she found offensive.
Okay, now, what department do you work in?
Started out, like I say, in material, and I came back in and worked in trim. And after trim, I went out to the cushion room, and then from the cushion room I went back at the end of another strike. I came back, they put me in the body shop. And I was out there for 89 days, and they felt they had enough employees come back that they put me back up in trim again. Mainly because my supervisor up there wouldn't release me back to the body shop so I could stay there.
So you pretty much worked in every department with the exception of paint?
I worked in paint for... had a job come open at the end of the line as an inspector, and I worked up there for about 6 weeks, and I started having lung problems, breathing, and I got a permanent restriction out of the paint department from the medical department due to respiratory reasons. I couldn't handle the paint fumes.
Out of all those departments that you worked in, was there one that you preferred over the other?
Oh, quality control.
And what's quality control?
Quality control is the cream of the crop out of all the jobs they have over there.
What did you do as part of quality control?
You basically check everybody else's work for... jobs that are done wrong, so that by the time the job gets at the end of the line, all the repairs are made on it that need to be, all the wrong parts are replaced. And I know from working on the line prior to this job, it was not that hard to make a mistake sometimes. Sometimes you didn't realize it, and they had matrices on the side of the car where you wrote up where you did something wrong. Usually on quality control, when you found an error in, like, a wrong piece of stock or a shortage, you'd notify that department that you got job so-and-so going down the line with the wrong part, so that to give their utility and repair people a chance to get it before it got to the end of the line. And I looked as an inspector as part of my job was to not find fault with the worker on the line, but to help him in case he did make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I was on that job, and I hired in on that job as on utility, where I had to learn all the different quality control stations in the plant. And if we had enough extra people on a certain day, you got to go out and refamiliarize yourself with the different jobs of your area. And that was my going out and meeting the people that I used to work with on the line, where I'd have time to stand around and talk to them. And my boss would come walking by sometime and say, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm making sure they're doing the job right. A part of my job, you know." He said, "Okay, keep up the good work." And there were times when I had no problem with going down on the line on the different inspection stations and saying to somebody, "Here, go take an extra 5-minute break or something. I'll do your job." And that not only while they were gone getting a break they didn't ask for, I was also getting hands-on experience on their jobs, so that if I ever did have to be called on their job, I could do it without having to have a break in time.
So, because you worked here and you worked in so many different places here, how has the population changed in terms of having female and gender, race here in the workplace? Has it changed a lot from when you first hired in?
Well, when I first hired in, I was very good with ethnic jabs. Black and white, Mexican, just different things I'd call a person, whether they were Mexican or a person of color. I got away with it.
Did you get along with the other people?
Huh?
Did you get along with the other people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I considered them friends, eh? Mm-hmm. Nothing was meant in as a discrimination type of thing. It was just ethnic fun. Mm-hmm. And back in 1995, something happened in the workplace that and it was an overnight type of thing where you started getting people crying sexual harassment. And things I used to say to people were put down to sexual harassment, and I just had a hard time coping with that.
Were there many women in the 70s working here when you hired in?
I really don't know the ratio when I hired in.
Did you feel that maybe that the more women who started working here, the more things needed to change?
I don't feel qualified to answer that question.
Okay, that's fine.
It was in the latter part of my employment here that we came up with sexual harassment, and it almost came to the people like me, just had to watch where we were putting our toes and finding it better to keep one's mouth shut rather than saying what we're thinking. And it became harder to make one person smile a day. And when I had the chance to retire at the age of 62, I took it. Never been sorry for it since, but I was about 9 months shy of having a full 30 years in, so with no overtime, looking forward to any no overtime at the time, and the difference in the loss of pay wasn't that great, so I retired.
What day was your last day of working here?
June 30th, 2002.
Okay.
June 26th was my birthday. And I retired 4 days after that.
Oh, okay.
And for tax purposes, I should have stayed the extra 2 weeks for 4th of July, but I didn't, so.
So you were here through the name changes of Fisher Body, BLC, Lansing Car Assembly.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you feel about those name changes?
Fisher Body will never die.
Why do you say that?
People, when they worked for Fisher Body, took pride in their work. You could say you were from Fisher Body, Lansing, and you were known all over the country. You could say you retired from BLC, and they'd say, where's that? But you say Fisher Body, Lansing, you were known all over the world, I think, as having the highest quality of automotive manufacturing in the world. And the people that worked here had pride in that. And General Motors has known all along that Lansing is the capital of quality. And that was our logo for a long time. That the Lansing worker has pride in workmanship. And I felt a part of that. And I still do.
That's great. So now, you live in Lansing now. Were you raised in Lansing?
Born and raised, yep.
And what high school did you go to?
Lansing Everett.
Lansing Everett. So, growing up, since we're talking about Fisher Body, growing up, what did you think about Lansing Fisher Body?
Great place to visit, but I'd hate to live there.
You didn't want to live there. You didn't.
My dad worked there. My uncles worked there. It put me through school. And my dad did everything he could to keep his son from getting a job at Fisher Body or with General Motors. Go out and make something yourself. So I went, first of all, and put 12 years in the military. And came out, did some odd jobs. The only reason why I didn't re-enlist again is because I knew I was going to Vietnam and I didn't want to go.
So why did you come here?
I came here because out of all the jobs that I had after getting out of the service, I had 11 full-time jobs in 2 years. General Motors was the only company with the best package in the wage myself and my new family. I had a wife and a child at the time. I'm an ex-Lansing fireman. So. And then I got the job at GM when I was released from the fire department for what they said was lack of interest. Meaning I didn't learn all the different streets and their intersections, which I was required to know if I wanted to be an engineer or a driver of an ambulance. At the time, I had less than 90 days, and I didn't care whether I knew all the streets or not. And I had a couple of supervisors at the time saying I showed a lack of interest, and I was let go. And if you have less than 90 days, you don't need a reason. So that's when I put my application here at the shop, and I told my dad what I'd done. And he seen somebody in the employment office, and they called me in. And that was the first time I hired when I worked out in the cushion room. Mm-hmm. And I got in a fight with one of the truck drivers out there. We had gasoline-powered tow trucks at the time. And what they'd do is they'd leave their engines running when they made the delivery. And the cushion room was an enclosed building, poor ventilation. And I proceeded to reach into the truck and turned it off, and the driver of that truck proceeded to beat on me, and I beat it on him back, and we both got fired. Well, he got 2 weeks off, and I got dismissed.
Because you didn't have your 90 days.
Because I didn't have 90 days in.
So what did your father do here?
Pardon?
What was your father? Your
My father started out in production, and then during World War II, he worked on the assembly line building parts for tanks. And from there, he got a job in the powerhouse. And I don't know exactly what he did for the first few years, but he ended up being an engineer over there, which was one step down from being a supervisor.
Oh, okay.
And he also was a journeyman welder. And when the boilers had a breakdown over there, they usually called for Dad to go in and do as a welder repairman. And there wasn't a thing about those that he didn't know. He took some college courses and got a journeyman's card as a boiler repairman. He said, when I retire, he says, that's what I'm going to do when I retire. Well, when he retired, his health was so bad that he couldn't.
Need a break. You need some more coffee? This is a warmer. Need a tissue?
No, I got it.
Here, I'm going to let him get some tissue. Here, hold on a second.
Yep. Holy. Now, make that call while you're taking a breather. Uh-huh.
My coffee just hit my bladder.
That was Mr. Van Epps, so I probably wants to know why I want that microphone back.
Oh, for the...
Did you? I told you.
Oh, for the... Yeah,
would have plugged in the
see,
front.
I know what.
The back's for a battery pack. That's
when you
fit.
Plug into...
The four prong on the back?
That's for?
It's for a nickel cadmium. You can run that
cadmium?
On battery.
Oh, so you just plug that in? Oh, okay.
She was just going through here.
She's probably jumping around.
Yeah, she is. She's not down here to work life at body yet.
Nope. Where were you at in 1979? Were you still in Trenton, or?
Probably.
Because I started out in the Cutlass line in 79. Putting in the little tiny windows that they had on the back doors, on the four doors.
Oh, okay.
That was, it was kind of an offline job, but it was also an online job. That's where I started at. I remember seeing you down there. I don't know if you were down there as utility or what, but that's where I started.
Probably. Anything to do with windows, I was on utility.
Short period of time, and then I went up to 3X.
I started out in 3X.
I was up there for a long time. Putting in rear seats. Nobody liked it. Everybody hated that job, but the guy across from me and me liked it.
Good team.
It was a good, we could read each other's movements and everything.
I did that job, little short guy. and studying to be a pilot. And if he's on an airplane, and if they're cheap, yeah, put him in.
If you know what you were doing, you could actually do and a then job it, then and sit
started
down.
Then I started installing the front seat.
Well, that was where he got
bolting him down, I mean.
Yeah.
And one night I got my hand hung up between the bolt like this.
Uh-oh. Between the track and the wall.
Yeah. And I didn't have any reverse on my gun.
Oh, no.
But that hurt.
And here I am walking down the side of the line backward yelling out, help. And
I didn't like the front seats.
And the utility guy come down, or the repairman, and he says, what's wrong? I says, I'm bolted to the floor. He says, well, pull it out. I says, I don't want to leave my hand there.
I want to leave your fingers in there.
So he got his gun and reversed it.
That was my first job, bolting down seats.
That happened more than once, though. I remember seeing
bolting down seats. Bolting down front seats.
You had to hold the bolt there to put the thing in. If you did pull it out quick enough, that would zip that bolt in there. I liked rear seats better.
Front seats were horrible. I had that. That's my first job here, and I mean, back then the guys are whopping them down with their arms and stuff. And back then, I didn't weigh 2 spits back then, and I'm going trying to put it in, and it's like I thought I was going to die. I said because you had to put on the 2-track, you had to bolt down the, you had to swam the seat down, bolt down the 2 front seats, put the track covers on, then you had to put the trash can in, then you had to put the trunk liner on, and you had to do something else. And all I knew was, this is ridiculous. And I said, I remember telling my mom, I said, Mom, I think I made a big mistake going in there. That's all I could think of, was I made the biggest mistake of my life going in there. Because I said, this is crazy for people to work like this. And the person who hired me in, he was a worthless piece of shit. Because the thing about it was,
I know Harada
was telling them to break me. Harada was telling them, Manuel Harada told them to break me. But they didn't.
I remember I used to use my arm. If you were strong enough, you just put your arm down and do a zip and do it.
That's what the guys did.
If you weren't strong enough to do
that. And I had no upper body strength for that.
Struggling to go down the line and everything else.
Well, that's good.
Rear seats are easy.
He's got to make it happen.
We're going to get this equipment. I told him to order the battery pack. And if you couldn't find an on-off microphone, so go ahead and keep the one we've got.
Okay.
Now we know how to plug it in.
I'm getting smarter as I go. It looks simple, but...
Any particular direction you want to go in from there?
He was looking at some.
I looked at your thing there.
Which one?
Trying to see where you were.
You show him the other side?
Yeah, there's the other side, too.
This is where we're heading to.
Oh, well.
This is all...
I didn't look over there.
Mm-hmm.
This starts getting into the fun. They want to know about, what'd you do on your lunch breaks, and did you leave the plant, and did you participate in the hootenannies, the Bible studies, the dinners, stuff like that. We're going to get into some of the stories about life online. Now, you never took the grease gun and squirted someone's glove full of grease.
No, never.
Oh, you lie.
And you never, are you trying to tell me you never put anything on the boss's telephone?
No, not me. No,
you lie, Pizzo.
I've never done that.
Yeah, he pulled all sorts of pranks.
When you were digging for pranks and he said no, I thought, come on.
He's a bald faced liar. I know it. He keeps shit going all the time.
Well, you were always, like you said.
I never done the greasing. I suggested it plenty of times.
Didn't you hate it though when one of the, remember all the air guns ran by those oil?
Yes.
And those things would break and you'd get covered in that
black stuff all in your hair.
Stunk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hated that.
Greasy.
That was one of the breakers. I hated that.
I hated that too.
I remember wearing the first pair of shorts in production.
You wore the first pair of shorts in production. What happened?
I had a pair of coveralls and I cut them down because it was so hot in here. And they were ready to send me home to get dressed. And Andy Eisel was a general foreman. And he says, if he doesn't cut himself, he can stay. If he cuts himself, he's fired.
That was in trim or body?
Trim.
I was going to say. Because you,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't do that body down there.
Body type, you couldn't.
But I was going to say, you must have looked like one of Spanky and the kids.
Yeah, I did.
That's what I saw when you just said that. I had that picture in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
But I was comfortable.
Oh, I'll bet you were. Okay. And those things breathe, too. They were baggy. Okay. You ready to...
Okay.
You got next question you're going to lead at him?
Yeah. You want to go into what it was like? Because when he hired in, actually, it was two floors on the same line. And then it went over... Have him talk about some of the things like changeover.
No, two lines, but we had two floors.
Well, yeah.
Did you get to what made a good and a bad supervisor?
No, nope, that's the next one too.
Okay.
Feel free to chime in whenever.
Why don't we skip that one because I can't tell.
Why? Only one's going to hear it. It's kids at Michigan State.
Yeah, what's a good one? What's a good one? What's a bad one?
Well, what made a good supervisor?
What made a good supervisor for you? Okay.
Are we going to start on that?
Sure.
Are we recording?
I hope not.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, well, we never quit?
Yeah, we did.
But you must have turned it on when you came back in. That's okay.
Well, we are rolling.
That's interesting. Well, then, we've covered some stuff then.
We'll have to edit this. Okay.
Did you turn it off?
I did. You saw me.
I didn't touch it.
Turned it back on.
But it's recording.
You turned it on when you came back in, though.
Well, no, when we... I must have bumped it because...
You must have bumped it when you came back in.
Because it was almost at 20 minutes before you took that last break, and now it's at 27. So it's been recording since I left. It's got you too, probably.
Whatever you all were talking about while we were gone, that'd be
it. Oh, Lord.
Oh, it's...
We'll have to go back and see that.
Well, that'll be edited out. We can...
But we were talking a minute ago and about you. You've worked in a lot of different departments and things like that. What made a good supervisor for you in those departments?
Well... I've run across different supervisors, and you all have, and some of them used to play by the book, and that was it. It's all black and white and no gray in between. But the good supervisor is the one that he was your dad. He was concerned about you, being able to do your job, come down and ask you questions if you're having problems with it. Maybe you need some training on how to maybe do it easier. You know, a lot of the things that was done as in practical jokes and things, he'd look the other way. Or if he'd seen something happen, he'd grin along with the people it was happening to. These were things that made life on the line bearable. If you were in violation of the rules, and he had to take disciplinary action to maintain order, then you were comfortable in getting disciplined by this person for something you did. I mean, there were other times when you'd want labor relations and everybody else present when you got a hold of one of the gung-ho supervisors. Knowing nobody can do you any good because it's your word against his. Still in all. And if you had a good committee man, he could usually talk you out of getting a bad discipline. And a lot of times discipline would be 3 days off, no pay. A lot of times a super committee man could get you down for 3 days on paper, no time missed. And I can remember one time where I was involved in the PTA at one of the grade schools. This was back in the 70s. And 3 months in advance, I'd asked for this particular Friday night off because it was night of the school carnival. And I was in charge of the kitchen. and my wife and I. And the supervisor always kept saying, well, keep me informed, keep me updated, and it's, the way it looks now, you're going to have that night off, no problem. Right up until the night before the event, the Thursday night, I asked again, I says, so it's okay for tomorrow night, I got tomorrow night off, right? I says, no, I'm going to need you in here, and I says, well, I won't be here. And until you're that right now, I've made this commitment that I'd be at the PTA, and I'm going to be there. You know, well, if you come into work, we'll get you out. I says, no, I'm not playing those games. Usually if they got you in, you didn't go nowhere. They'd let somebody else go home first. And I didn't come in that Friday, and first thing Monday night when I came in, the line hadn't even started yet. Well, as soon as it did start, they had a utility man on my job and had me in the office. And at the time, I was up for 2 weeks off for disciplinary action. And the committee man talked him down to 2 weeks on paper. I said, oh, no, I'm not in agreement to that. I said, I'll take the 2 weeks off. He says, I already got you. I said, I don't want it. I want the time off. I said, go with me on this. And so the committee man says, okay, you want the 2 weeks off? Give it to him. And they did. I went to the school board. It said, General Motors is punishing me for taking the night off and working a PTA, and they want me to get involved in community affairs. My dad, who was still living at the time, knew some men that were stockholders in the company through profit sharing and all that. They got, management here got letters from stockholders complaining as to why can't people get time off of work to get involved in community affairs. So when I came back at the end of 2 weeks, I'd known all this stuff had gone on, but I never said a word. I reported to my job and was doing it, and they had got somebody to come up and do my job, and back to the office I go. And the supervisor asked me, what can we do to make this go away? I says, clear and pay with a verbal apology. And the verbal apology has to be made in front of my peers. And well, we can go with that, but not to clear and pay. I says, well, letters keep on coming. I got my record cleared. I got paid for the 2 weeks I was off. And I got my verbal apology in front of my peer group. And at that point, that was the last night I worked in C-Trim. Next thing I knew, I was working down in the body shop. Didn't care. I made my point.
Well, that's some of the things that make a good committee person is the person who also was somebody who made things happen for you.
Yes.
Too. So you said that you were community active. Were there any other types of things other than the PTA that you were active in your community?
I was involved in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts right up until the divorce from my first wife.
Mm-hmm. So now, what? Obviously, you've had some interesting things. But what were some of your best memories inside the plant? Winning that war was one of them, I'm sure.
best memories. Family, that's all I can.
Now you, Doug?
Tom, you said that there was the time that you had told him ahead of time you needed that day off to be at PTA. And it, obviously there was a manpower problem. And can you tell me, when you hired in, were there people enough to run the line? And when did it change where there became a manpower problem?
Manpower problem was really up to the supervisor. I can't remember a time that we didn't have extra help to where somebody got to go home that night. Even, like I say, with the night that I wandered off in question, there were times like, well, a point in question. I was working C-trim at the time, and I don't remember what year it was. I'd say it was 81. We had a political rally out in Washington, D.C., concerning the air control supervisors or something, air controllers going on strike, and we were going out on picketing Washington in support or something like that. And that was a memorable experience for me. I went with my wife's group. The ones from the local here were I guess the bus was all filled up or something, and going with her local, we drove out. It was a wife and I and two kids. We drove out there to the rally, and ended up over by the Washington Monument at a rally point. And then there, from there, we went on a march on D.C., a flea on a goat dog's back is what we felt like, you know, so many brothers and sisters out there. And now we drove out there like Friday night after work and got there in time for the rally, and then on a Saturday. And then we got back to the car and went out to the, drove out to the ocean. It was dark when we got there, so we all slept in the car. And then the next night, the kids got to run on the beach, and we all waded in the ocean. It's the first time they'd ever seen the ocean. And then we drove back on Sunday back to Michigan. And we got in here about 4 o'clock Monday morning. So I just stayed awake and called in here to the shop, explained my situation that we just got back from D.C. If I could have the day off. They said, no, you come on in. If we got the help, we'll let you go. And I came in. And as soon as I came in, they took the utility man off the job that was assigned to my job, let him go, and relieved so-and-so to have the day off. And I says, wait a minute. I said, you said I could have the day off if I came in. Well, they wanted the day off, so you stay here and work. So that's what made a bad foreman. And so I just, I stayed, I did my job all that day. Then I'll tell everybody about the trip and that. They were asking, well, what are you doing in here today? And I said, the boss said to come in. Yes. I came in and get me out the door. At the end of the shift, the boss come around and apologized. I said, it's not accepted. I said, you lied to me. You lied to everybody I know, as far as that goes. There's no getting out of it. There are little things like that that
You're done?
Okay. No.
You broke it.
Good. No, I just still wanted you to stop with that line. I just didn't have any place to go.
So, Tommy, can you tell me what was your worst job you ever did in town? One
job,
of them?
The worst job. I really didn't ever have a worst job that I can look back on. I've had a lot of bad jobs.
Well, what were one of the bad ones that you had?
Installing the right wiper motors on the front end of the job where you had to stand on the little piece of body carriage that stuck out, body hauler, and install the windshield wiper motors. Then you had to be careful that you didn't slip and hit the windshield that was already in place with your hand or you'd split it, the windshield that is. You never knew who done that. Or if you slipped on the, usually that pad that stuck out was greasy and you had to get on there with your steel-toed shoes. And if your feet got slippery on the bottom when you hit a slippery surface, like walking on ice. Mm-hmm. And the same way with dismounting and getting off, you had to be careful how you got off because you could slip and fall on the floor. Mm-hmm. And back then you had to sort your own wiper blades. They came in big metal containers, individually wrapped. And you had to take one out of each bin and take your two wiper motors, and you had a pouch on that you put your screws into. And you had to manhandle a gun to go along with this stuff, an air gun. We had put the people that used to have the air guns knew how they worked. They used to electric-powered. It'd be you take the whole apparatus down, unhook it from the track, and go around three people and put it back together and put your motor on the job and then go get your stock and then come back and do the job. And you had so many feet to do this job, one car length, I think it was, or sometimes, depending on the job, the teams working on the job, you had either two teams or three teams doing the job. And the teamwork thing was where you had, you start at point A and get out at point D, but meanwhile through B and C, where the other two people would be working, doing their jobs, just a continuous motion of lying all the time, you never get ahead. Never could work up the line, couldn't work down the line. That would be a bad job. Being stuck in one job night after night, I consider it a bad job because the same thing day after day after day. I said, this is not the life for me, no matter how easy the job is or how hard it is. And that's when I decided I was going on utility. The first time I went on, And I was up in seat trim, and that's what I did. I went on utility, and I made it a point to learn every job in that department. I made it a point to learn all the jobs that they put me on afterwards. Because my next goal was to get on repair, which was over in the Horseshoe area where all the repairs were. At the end of the line, they used to have an area, they pulled cars off the line to be repaired. They'd pull them off into this Horseshoe line, and where the repairmen worked all the time. And, man, those guys had it made. Get a 15-minute job, and they'd take them 45 minutes to do it. And get paid more to do it than besides. And they usually had somebody else go run and chase the stock down for them. They didn't even have to do that. So, I never had enough seniority to get the repair job. Even by the time I retired, I didn't have enough seniority.
What type of seniority was in the repair job?
Pardon?
What type of seniority was did it take to hold a repair job?
Oh, usually your people that were eligible to retire were pulling down the repair jobs because they were so easy.
So you talked 30 plus then?
30 plus, 25, 30.
Okay.
Usually by the time somebody got 25 years in here, they'd found a job that they were happy with and didn't really want repair. Mm. Like I say, when I got on quality control, that was a job I enjoyed the most. You could almost set your own hours on that job if you were an extra person. Mm. And you had no problems with giving person extra time off to do their job. I did the same thing when I was on utility. If the supervisor kept me around as an extra person during the day, I'd let go down and make sure I knew jobs by just doing the job. Well, somebody gave an emergency relief they didn't ask for. Emergency relief is where if somebody had to have a potty call or get a cup of coffee or something, you let them go do it. And back when I hired in, the only place you could get a cup of coffee was in the cafeteria. They didn't have coffee pots in every department.
They didn't. When did they bring the machines down to the floor, do you remember?
Oh, God. 1990? 85, 90? Before we had negotiated break areas where you could had your vending machines that dispersed the pop and the coffee and smoking area really is what they were designated. Mm. And depending on your area on the floor.
So you talked about smoking. Now, was smoking allowed when you first came in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How did you, and I take it you're a smoker? Were you a smoker?
I was a smoker for 35 years.
Now, I know later on, in the early 2000s, we got the smoking ban, where we couldn't. How did that affect you and your job?
No, smoking ban came after.
Oh, after you left. Okay, well, that was good after you had. Well, no.
We had smoking in designated areas when I left. Sometimes if a person made it known to a supervisor that smoking bothered them on the line, you couldn't smoke within so many feet of them. Mm-hmm. And there was no smoking in the bathrooms anymore. Because that was considered a confined space.
Okay.
My last 5 years, I was suffering from emphysema. I didn't realize it. And by the time I retired, I ended up having to be on oxygen 24/7. And that's when I started listening to the doctor, you know. Yeah, you're sick, mister. You got emphysema, you should quit smoking. Well, I've been out 3 years, and I can honestly say I've been 31 days without a cigarette.
That's great, finally.
And not that I don't want one. I've been told by my lung specialist that there won't be a day going on for the rest of my life that I won't want a cigarette. But I can live with that. Besides that, a carton of cigarettes now is $44. I'm on a fixed income. I can't afford them.
So, can you tell me, what did you used to do for lunch?
Lunch?
Yeah.
I brought my lunch. I ate up in the cafeteria, I think, 4 times since I began working here. And I always felt that a half an hour was not enough time to go from your job site to the cafeteria, get something to eat, and run back to your job site.
So,
so what I started doing is bringing in a thermos of coffee and a couple of sandwiches, cookies, some fruit. And that would last me all night. We used to have what they call a coffee wagon that came around once or twice a day, to where they'd shut the line down and give you time to get something off the coffee wagon and get an emergency relief if you needed one. And then they did away with that and gave you, that's when we got the third break during the day. And when they did away with the coffee wagon.
Did you participate in any of the dinners that they had at lunchtime sometimes? Were put together?
Either what?
Any of the dinners that were put on by the departments? Did you ever participate in any of
those? All the dinners. Yeah, usually all the dinners we had in here were retirement dinners when somebody finally retired. And
about the holidays?
Holiday dinners, usually the supervisor furnished the meat, and everybody else brought things from home. Some guys thought they were getting off on the cheap, the bachelors, you know, they'd bring in chips and bologna and cheeses. And but during the breaks is when we usually had those. And during the dinners, sometimes we have the main course would be a ham dinner or venison. We've had a couple of times where the deer hunters would come in and bring some venison cooked up. You know, they get about 3 or 4 hunters bringing some venison and share it with the whole department. It was rare. I think it was only happened once. Another time, a man and his woman raised turkeys, and one Thanksgiving he brought in 2 complete turkey dinners, or 2 complete turkeys for dinner. And he had all the trimmings and everything that went with them. And he got that as a, I think more or less for advertising, but he didn't charge anybody anything.
Did you get any lasting friendships out of the plant?
Lasting acquaintances.
Lasting acquaintances.
I friends I made in here were in here. As far as going to somebody's house and visiting, I've never done that. They've never been to my house. Believe it or not, I like it that way. A couple of people, we were going to have a retirement dinner at my house in Open House, and my wife was ill of health, so we were not able to have that. But there were two people that I'd invited from the line that I felt real close to. And since then, I've talked to them on the phone, or I send them Christmas cards or whatever. Like I say, all my friendships have been in the plant. They've stayed here. Acquaintances, and yourself and Marilyn, I consider an acquaintance, so Doug and John, friends, in a roundabout way, I guess we are, but we're more of a Fisher Body family than we are friends, I think. I feel more comfortable saying Fisher Body family rather than BLC, because VLC is just a bunch of letters thrown in to make a statement. Fisher Body is Fisher Body, and that's what we were.
Right. During your time there, can you tell me, were you active in the union at all? Outside of the strikes and pickets?
Not really. I ran for office a couple of times and never got elected.
So what office did you run for?
I ran for a committee person and had a... would have won that except that the guy that was the incumbent found out my name was there and his wasn't. He had not planned on running again. And so he ran against me and got elected. And the other time was... when I ran for sergeant-at-arms, which at the time that I started running for, it was held by a retiree. And I felt that retirees at the time were retired, period. It was time for active working membership to be... running the union. The retirees had their chance. Now they're retired. It's making the job open for active workforce. I didn't get the job. We had a runoff election with another man, and the other man had less seniority than I did, and he had younger ideas. And that's what I was trying to infuse into the union at the time, was get the younger people involved in the union. Mm-hmm. And so I stepped down, and I believe Kevin Beard was the man that was running for the position at the time, and I stepped down and signed off for him to win the election.
Mm. Out of all your bargain benefits, which one do you appreciate the most, would you say?
My medical.
Your medical.
When I hired in, I was paying $100 and some odd a month for medical insurance. And as a copay, it's Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then I think it was the next contract... after 30 and out, that we got the full paid medical. And we've carried that right up on through retirement. And now I don't know the whole story, but there's rumor going on that the contract's been opened up and we've lost... full paid benefits. It's just a rumor, as far as I'm concerned at this point. Nothing's in black and white. But I've known for years that it's been coming down to the point of there's got to be a give and take on the union's part as far as medical benefits, even the retirees, to where there has to be a higher rate of copay of some kind. You just can't keep on having people retired and not the workforce to keep up the benefit. As far as the copay, I'm against it, but as far as a higher rate on prescription drugs, I can get a 90-day supply for $5 now. I would have no problem getting the same supply 90 days for $15. Even though I'm, like I say, I'm on a fixed income, I could make allowances for that. This is something I need, and but I'm totally against the copay on the medical for retirees, and that's just my saying.
Tom, you've been retired since 2002, you said. Can you tell us what the last day was like for you?
Party time.
It was party time. What did you do on your last day of work?
First of all, there's a retirement dinner for you held by your, thrown by your department. My wife was in a motorized wheelchair, so that kind of limited the party time for me. Whereas you get on and take the plant tour and stuff with other retirees, and, or walk your family through the different job sites. I didn't do that. All we did was came in for the dinner. I know in past retirements that I've gone around and I've enjoyed going around with buddies of mine that have retired, only because they worked here so long that they didn't have family anymore. Some of them 35, 40 years. And I said, I'll never be one of those. You know, you always try to tell somebody, why don't you retire, why don't you retire, you got the seniority. They tell me I can't afford it, I can't afford it. What's the sense of staying until you got 35, 40 years, and there's just you, your family's all gone, and you can't work no more? What is there for your quality of life now that you've given everything to the company, but there's nothing left for you on the outside? I made up my mind that that was not going to happen to me. I retired, became a full-time caregiver for my wife until she passed away. And now I'm on retiring it. I'm enjoying every day of it. Some days are better than others, but there's really no bad day. Okay. And just going to the, there are no bad days.
Well, Tommy, I want to say thank you.
Is there anything you'd say to, Doug Rademacher, Tom, is there anything you'd say to someone with about 10 years in? We hired a new batch of people in 95. They've got about 10 years in now, and they've got 20 years, hopefully, to work. What would you have to tell somebody that's fairly new to the auto industry and about working for Lansing?
Well, yeah, I would. I tell what they told me for years. Get an education. Get as high as you can in the company. And if you have an education, get into a different field other than automotive production. Because automotive production is going to be a thing of the past. There's going to be different types of vehicles made in the future where it's not going to be the combustible engine. Everything will be automated. And this is the world you have to prepare yourself and your children for, is the automated world. And the only way you're going to do that is with a higher rate of education. There's always going to be the people with high school graduates that are going to come in and do the factory job. But even some of them are going to be on the outside looking in. They're going to be doing the other menial jobs that it takes for a civilization to grow upon, which is housing, construction, maintenance on housing, all your different trades are going to be filled with, in the future, by high school grads, and your college graduates are going to be in the upper echelon jobs. And this is where you want you and your family to be, is in the upper echelon. If you say to yourself, I'm not good enough to move ahead, you won't be. Is to make a goal that I want to be better than I am now. And the only way I'm going to do that is to go to college. There's benefits out there for you to get paid to go to college if you complete the course. I know GM and I know the union both encourage people to go out and get a higher level of education and take advantage of these courses. Don't be a stay-at-home, stick-in-the-mud. I'm satisfied with where I'm at. Don't ever cop that attitude. Don't ever be satisfied with where you're at when you could be better. And if nothing else, at least make one person smile with you every day. If not with you, at you.
It's worked for you, Tom. It's been a pleasure with your interview today. Thank you.
Thank you,
Tom. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.